It is time, of course, once again for the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Shaylin Cochran, and so happy to be joined in the studio this morning with Amy Seitz from Lancashire Farms and Maya Wilson, the chef at the new Addy Camp restaurant that is almost ready to open in Soldotna, and also cookbook author of Alaska from Scratch. And thank you both so much for making some time. I know it's a busy time of year for both of you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having us.
It's always a pleasure to be out here.
And we're happy today. This is the second year in a row that we've done this and hoping to continue making this an annual thing, kind of an annual holiday cooking show. We've just sort of finished up one. I almost think of it sometimes as a practice meal. And then there's a whole industry, it seems, based now on a practice meal for Thanksgiving. But now preparing for another round of holiday entertaining and cooking. And we like to do this and talk about these things with a little bit of a local twist. So as we meander through this conversation over the next hour, we'll hopefully have some tips and tricks and some ways that you can kind of keep things as local as possible. We know that that's sometimes kind of difficult to do in Alaska, but there are ways to do it. There are some things to do, and we're going to share some of those with you. If you have tips, tricks, recipes, maybe some funny holiday anecdotes of holiday cooking and entertaining gone awry, we would love to hear those as well. 283-8414 is the number if you'd like to call in and get in on the conversation this morning. Again, 283-8414 is the number. And I guess maybe just to kind of start out a little bit, when we think about these big holiday meals, I'm curious for both of you, is this a big, it's a big tradition for me and my family back home, and for most people it is. I'm curious for both of you, what kind of sets apart this sort of holiday thing? Is it, maybe it's not all, I'm Maya, is it really any that different from you? From day to day, everything else?
Oh, yeah, it sure is. It's the one time a year my oldest son requests crab. I can't afford to have crab on the table the other 364 days of the year. And so that's the time that we're going to bust out that Alaska king crab.
That's right. It's a time for treats a little bit.
Right, yeah, right.
And a lot of it.
And a lot of it. That's right. And that's something that maybe we can talk about a little bit too, is finding ways to kind of balance this out, because I really enjoy the idea of trying to think about how we build these big meals for a large group setting and kind of get through them in a way that is enjoyable and fun, but not sort of excruciating at the end of it too, because right. That can be part of it as well. And that's why I'm happy, Maya, that you're here to kind of guide us through maybe some of the culinary aspects of this a little bit. And for me, in starting, I guess, as you mentioned, this is a really interesting time of year. I think for a lot of people, there are those meals that get put together sort of once a year, twice a year. And this is about that time. For folks who, I'm getting started off on just some kind of basic ideas and starting from scratch a little bit, for folks maybe who this is that special event and they don't spend all that time in the kitchen the other 364 days a year, and you know that you've got this huge thing to prepare, what would you suggest as some tips in terms of maybe kind of working ahead and doing that kind of thing?
I would definitely recommend a protein that you can cook for a large amount of people. Turkey's a great one, and there are places to get some local turkeys around here. But also, like, a rack or leg of lamb is amazing and really popular around Christmas time. And I know this great farmer that has lamb.
you just have to get on a waiting list.
Right.
Prime rib is one that I really enjoy.
Yeah, prime rib is awesome. Also serves a huge number mm-hmm. of people. And so then you're not having to produce as much volume of food and just, you know, make one big protein that's kind of the star of the show. Crab is another great one. Even if you have a troll caught king or something, that's a beautiful time of year to bring it out.
And do you find it important? I don't find this necessarily as important. I know a lot of people do. I don't necessarily find having a brilliant presentation of it to be necessarily the star of the show. You mentioned having a big king salmon out there. If you had that out nice and filleted, it would look absolutely gorgeous. But I think I would be just as happy for that to be just, you know, on a plate with everything else. How much of an emphasis do you put on sort of presentation for your guests? Or does it matter, because we're talking family and friends?
For my family, I mean, it's the time that we get to bring out the, you know, grandma's china that never gets used, or the special, you know, serving dishes that uh-huh. we never use. So, mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes we like to fancy it up just to use those things.
They're sitting there for I'm glad you brought that up, because there is some danger in bringing out those utensils and those those fancy things once a year, and not just breaking them. I recall one time when I learned some very basic science about microwaves, and that little gold rim around the fancy coffee mugs. Yeah, you can't reheat the coffee in that. You have to take it out, and yes, so important lessons can be learned when we bring out the good stuff, I guess.
Yeah, that gravy boat that only sees the light of day once a year.
Is that what that is?
Right. Yeah, gotta have gravy.
So, all right. During Thanksgiving, my mother recently at home has taken over some of the cooking duties. That used to be Dad's sort of milieu. And gravy is one that has been kind of a head scratcher. And how do you make non-lumpy gravy?
Okay, you whisk the life out of it.
That's it?
Well, pretty
much. Is it just that simple?
But make sure that you have lots of liquid and aromatics and veggies in the bottom of your pan. So along with the drippings, you're getting kind of all of that flavor, and it's not going to dry out. And then you should have plenty of juices to work with to make a beautiful gravy.
Yeah, if you're talking about roasting, say, a turkey, that produces a lot of liquid. And then you just sort of work with that and layer flavors on top of that.
Right. Yeah, so throw in some fresh sage or rosemary or, kick it up with a little hint of cayenne or black pepper and throw some wine in there. It could be really yummy.
And when you're bringing all this together and then, of course, you're going to thicken it with something, how important is timing for really nailing down a smooth gravy?
Okay, you wanna be whisking that just before it goes to the table, because as it cools, it will separate and kind of coagulate and seize up on you. So you want that needs to be the last thing you're doing as the wine is being poured. You are whisking gravy.
That's just sort of the go back to activity, just every few minutes back to the gravy for a little whisk.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We just talked about this at Thanksgiving. I was up in Anchorage with some friends, and the gravy separated while we were in the middle of our meal, and we went back for seconds, and it was all separated. And we said, we would make a fortune if we came up with like a gravy keeper that prevents this from happening.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. Because when you try to bring it back from life, the next day,
right,
it's totally possible, but you're almost starting from scratch. It's like a little block of bouillon almost, and you're starting from scratch.
Yeah, definitely. It's gravy's kind of a pain. It has a mind of its own.
Yeah, I like to assign that to someone else.
That's the gift that you can bring to us, is the gift of gravy.
Yeah, you're in charge of gravy.
Well, Maya, you mentioned lamb being a favorite of yours during the holidays, and Amy, I think you know a little bit of something about that from your work at Lancashire Farms in Soldotna, and maybe you could share with us some favorite ways that you like to prepare a big meal starring some lamb.
Yeah, well, we have nice fresh lamb regularly
to begin with.
We know how it was raised, I know how it was processed, and so yeah, I mean, like this Thanksgiving we didn't have very many people there trying to figure out what we wanted to do, and do we go with the traditional turkey or a large chicken, or we decided to pull out a leg of lamb. And I know everyone doesn't get that. Like, oh, well, let's just have lamb. So we kind of, I really like my meat basic, especially if it's good, fresh meat. Mm-hmm. So I don't, unless there's something extra special going on, I don't make rich sauces to go on it. I like salt, pepper, garlic, so I can taste the meat, mm-hmm. Especially since we have nice flavor. our new go-to recipe for leg of lamb is kind of butterfly it, and we raised garlic this year, so fresh garlic in there, fresh mint, although Thanksgiving was more freeze-dried mint from the garden.
Sure.
So garlic, mint, a little salt and pepper, and then roll it up and cook it. And this year we did it with our own beets and potatoes and carrots, and so.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
And a leg of lamb I'm going to guess that this is a portion that has probably a lot of connective tissue and sort of demands a slower cooking time, or am I wrong on that?
Not so much. Yeah, I mean it's one of the nicer pieces of cuts of meat. Nice and tender, juicy.
And these, again, are all benefits of being able to have it fresh and know that it was, it hasn't been sitting in a freezer for a year waiting for you to come along and buy it.
Although when it's really fresh, when it goes in the freezer,
Right,
Even because this was last year's lamb that we were eating, but still not definitely not freezer burned.
Right. And let's move, maybe we could move up that particular animal a little bit. And I do want to branch out and talk about some other options, vegetarian and some other fish things that we could do too. But I want to move up the body of the lamb a little bit, because as you and I were talking before the show, Amy, I think I mentioned it maybe just right now. I've never done the whole fancy,
the French rack
that looks like a crown of, right. Yeah. And Maya, tell me, are these worth it? Have you made things like this?
You know, that lends to the more fussier side of things, and I tend to not go that direction. I don't even own a tablecloth. I don't own fine china. And so setting the table is very basic and simple for me, and I like to think that my food has that kind of approachability too. And so, I'm not so big on the big crown of, you know, all of that, but it makes a very impressive presentation for maybe Martha Stewart.
Yes.
I'm no Martha Stewart, but I did want to comment. You had talked about the mint for the lamb. We have fresh mint up at Fresh 365 year round, which is our hydroponic farm up there at Whistle Hill. And I think a nice mint, fresh mint sauce with lamb is just perfection.
Yeah, and I would say fresh mint is better when we've done it in the summer and our mint is prime. Well,
as people are trying to prepare for this, let's do a little plug. What sort of stuff is available fresh right now?
So we have greens and herbs up at Fresh 365. So romaine lettuce, which there is an E. coli recall on everywhere else.
Right.
We are growing fresh and hydroponically up there. We have Salanova lettuce, red and green, arugula, and then we have some chives, dill, cilantro, a whole forest of basil, Thai basil and Italian basil. And did I say dill? So we have quite a few things up there, greens and herbs that you can't really get fresh in the winter. We've got them.
Yeah.
And I would say that we got Thai basil recently, and that's an herb that my mom discovered this summer. We grew for the first time this summer, and that is a very tasty basil, you know, slightly different.
Yeah. What, maybe you could, I'm familiar, you know, with what a lemon basil is pretty self-explanatory. What makes a Thai basil unique?
I would say that it has almost more of a licorice hint to it. And the leaves are a little pointier and not as round as like an Italian basil. And so I would say more licorice.
And so a flavor like that, a fennel kind of a flavor, mm-hmm. would seem to lend itself to some darker roast kind of things. A flavor that could really hold up to winter root vegetables and some heavy proteins and that sort of thing. Is that something to keep in mind too when you're talking about the different ways you're building flavors? Is how each thing can hold up to the other so that you're not overpowering everything?
Oh, definitely. And there's always a balance in cooking. You want your acid, your salt, your heat, and all those things coming together, and maybe sometimes a little sweetness, natural sweetness from a locally grown carrot, and you bring that, and then you add your herbs and
Amy, I still want to stick with some lamb, because I'm beginning to think that maybe this is something I need to branch out and try some sort of a cut. What are some other recommendations a little bit further up the animal from the leg?
You know, one of my favorites is actually a shoulder chop, which, you know, isn't like the prime cut or anything, but
a lot of times those can be even better than a prime cut, just based on the fact that, I mean, again, so maybe this time it's the time for a long, slow cook on a shoulder cut. Not so much.
Not so much. And one thing with lamb, you want to be really careful not to overcook it.
Okay.
Medium rare to rare, to really get the flavor.
For most of these cuts of lamb, are we talking relatively high and direct heat for a cooking process?
I would say the chops anyway. I think the lamb, when we're roasting it, we like to do the high heat for a short amount of time in the beginning and then turn it down to a lower, slower roasting process. But
Is this one of those searing operations that I hear about where you're supposed to sear all sides of it
to lock the moisture in?
Mm-hmm. Does that really work? What's the science behind that?
It does. You want to seal in all those juices and all that flavor. And if you put it into the oven or to braise or for a long cook without having seared in all of that yumminess. But also, if you get color on your meat, that's where the flavor is. And if you get that kind of deep brown caramelization on there, you are just imparting flavor that is going to carry the whole dish. I would say also along the lines, if you are going to have a chop, yeah, rare to medium rare is perfect, and you want to sear those fast and then have them pink in the center. But I really like a lamb tagine, where you cook it low and slow for hours, and there's no pinkness there, but I mean, it's just fall apart tender, and you have kind of Moroccan spices, and it's really yummy way to do lamb.
I'm sure one of the many yummy ways to do lamb.
Yeah, another is curried lamb, you know, some sort of curry dish with lamb.
Definitely.
Yeah, can't go wrong there.
You can't go wrong. Curried anything was something that I did not discover until relatively recently, but give me curried anything, and I'm pretty happy about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've even got into putting curry on the outside of the chicken when we roast a chicken.
Mm. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, a nice crispy curried skin mm-hmm. on the chicken. Yeah.
So in talking about cooking some of these stars of the show, the proteins, I hear a lot about carryover, and there's this idea that you take it out of the oven or whatever, and it's going to continue to cook. Could you explain a little bit of how that works and how timing, again, factors into making sure that once it's on the table, it's not dried out and overcooked? And yeah, what's the best plan of attack for that?
You definitely want to allow resting time so that if you take it straight out of the oven and you slice it right away, the juices will all run out. You need to let it rest so that the juices redistribute into the meat. And then when you slice it, all that juiciness stays in the meat. So,
yeah. And then, yeah, since you just pulled it out of a really hot oven or whatever, or even the frying it on the stove top,
right.
You know, it's got that heat in there. So, yeah, it will continue to cook a bit.
And what about proper temperatures? And I'm thinking specifically for lamb, because I've never cooked lamb. Is it the same general philosophy as beef, or roughly around there, you know, 145-ish degrees? Is that sort of what you're looking for?
You want it lower.
Lower than that?
I think 140 is well done.
Oh,
lamb.
Really? Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow,
I
okay.
I want to say 125 to 130 is
that's
a
much lower
rare
than I would have thought.
Rare.
That's interesting. It's sort of like duck in that way. Duck is a bird, and you're supposed to just cook the daylights out of birds, but not duck.
Well, duck not is duck. A dark meat.
Duck mm-hmm. is a dark meat. Yeah, so maybe
a very delicious one.
Well, hey, I hear that sounds like a segue to me. The one time, this is my fun story. Do it in preparing a meal one time. I thought it would be really interesting to put a big salad together and some nice thin sliced duck breast on it, very fancy. Mm-hmm. And I had these frozen duck breasts, and I was running behind, and I kind of forgot about them. I put them in a pot of water on the back of the wood stove to thaw out, and I came back an hour and a half later, I don't know how long later, and they were basically perfectly cooked through. I think I figured out a poor man's sous vide. I don't... Which I'm not typically a fan of that style of cooking, but that took them out and seared the fat side of the breast and rendered what little fat there was left, because it had mostly kind of taken care of itself. But sure enough, a perfect rare. I have no idea what the water temperature was. It was a complete stroke of dumb luck. Did I luck out there? Duck it has this reputation of being sort of finicky to prepare. What are your thoughts?
Well, you definitely want to render out that fat. That's the biggest thing. There's that big amount of fat that you need to render down. It really helps if you score it.
And to sort of cut through the skin a little bit, so that fat has an escape route, basically?
Exactly, where you kind of put a checkerboard pattern in it, and so you allow more of the heat to get up into that fat and render down. And then you get a nice crispy skin that you can season really well. And then if you can keep the meat, though, somewhat pink and tender, because it'll get really chewy on you really fast.
Yeah. And maybe that's where the finicky part comes in, is that, right. That there's not a lot of forgiveness. Maybe if you get up to that point, it's mm-hmm. delicious, and then doesn't take very long over that point to kind of
fall off the cliff.
Fall off the cliff. And are there folks, I know that there are folks producing chickens locally. Amy, you're one of them, and turkeys. Are there folks that do ducks locally? I don't know.
We have done ducks in the past, and not my favorite to...
They're
difficult.
Are they more difficult than turkeys? I've done turkeys before, and
more difficult than
because
turkeys.
there's like this scale. Chickens are pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Turkeys are.
If you do them right, I mean, they're still pretty easy. They're just big.
They're just bigger. Yeah.
And, yeah. So, ducks.
Are ducks a little bit smarter? Is that what's going on?
Well, you know, ducks are more wild. Yeah. So their oils and their feathers and theory is that they're a little more wild still, so they really hold on to those feathers.
they don't really want to be dinner.
And then they have the down that you have to take off.
Oh yeah.
So I know people who do the waxing where you pluck them as much as you can, and then you put them in hot wax and pull them out and let the wax dry and then peel the wax off.
Wow.
I had no idea that there was such an involved process. This is making me understand a little bit why ducks kind of fancy.
Yeah. And expensive.
Yes. I should remind everyone, Maya Wilson, of course, joining us this morning, cookbook author of Alaska from Scratch, and she's also the chef at the soon-to-be-open Addie Camp restaurant in Soldotna. Amy Seitz with us this morning as well from Lancashire Farms, talking all about holiday cooking, some tips and tricks and things to think about as we're going through that season of entertaining folks and preparing big meals and partaking in some fun times with family and friends, and we hope that those are all on your agenda for the holidays. If you'd like to get in on the conversation this morning, feel free to give us a call. 283-8414 is the number. Again, 283-8414. And Maya, you mentioned crab as being this special once-a-year dish that you bring out. You have kids. That's what they like to do. I was really curious about how you do handle having kids around the kitchen. Do you like to try to get them involved, or is it easier? Can you find tasks for them to do so that they're kept busy and participating, but still not in the way?
Right. Yeah. My oldest son, he's in high school now, so he'll love to get in the kitchen and help make like a halibut wonton even, and do the kind of meticulous folding and the whole process of it. And then my daughter's very happy to make a batch of peanut butter cookies, and she's almost 11. So, I think the answer is to not force it, that you give them opportunities in the kitchen and let them take them or leave them. And, I don't force the issue if they want to help or kind of let them do it.
Yeah. And Amy, did you grow up helping out with these kinds of things?
Yeah. When I was younger, and even when I was older, my main task was the pumpkin pies.
Oh, really? Tell us the secret of pumpkin pie, because I've only tried to make it a couple of times, and the reason it's only been a couple of times is because I hate making pie crust, and I've never gotten the texture right. I can never find that sweet spot between getting it nice and perfectly set. It's always a little bit too runny, and then I put it back in and I forget about it for 5 minutes because it only needed 3 minutes. And what is the secret?
I guess my secret was we didn't do that. We did more of like a pumpkin custard pie.
Ah.
So it was more like the pudding.
Okay. So that's blur the lines a little
bit.
That's
right.
That's the secret. Combine styles. I like that. Looks like we've got a caller on the line. We'll go there now. Good morning. You're on the conversation. Who's this?
It's Steve Dahl.
Hey, good
How
morning,
you doing,
Steve.
Caitlin?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, I called because, I was listening to the different recipes for lamb. Myself, personally, I like to take equal quantities of dried mint, peppermint, and dried rosemary. Put them in a mortar and pestle, turn them into a powder, rub the entire leg with it, double wrap it in aluminum foil, and bake it at 325 for 2 hours, no more. It normally comes at medium, and when you open up the aluminum, all of the seasoning and juice that was inside steaming into the meat is finally released for you to enjoy as a reduction on your potatoes.
Ah, yes, double duty.
It is absolutely scrumptious. As far as duck goes, face it, they are messy. There is no other word. You give them water, they jump in, they poop in it while they're eating, and they stand there and go, oh, don't you want to get wet? And it's like No.
Well, yeah, sometimes, that lays to why they're maybe a little bit pricier and tough to find sometimes. Well, Steve, thanks so much for that call, and thanks for that recipe. I'm thinking about branching out this year, and maybe I'm going to have to put lamb on the menu, and that sounds like a good place to start. Thanks for that call, Steve.
And one last thing, please.
Yes, sir.
As far as pie crust goes, if you want to learn how to make a good pie crust, talk to Lou.
Ah, yes, Miss Lou. I'm sure she has delicious pie crusts.
And one last thing. It is time for the winter solstice. Take a cheese pizza, put reindeer sausage on it, and make what they call in Iceland the Rudolph pizza to celebrate.
That sounds like a perfect solstice treat. Thanks a lot for that call, Steve. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you.
All right. Bye-bye. The solstice, that sounds actually kind of good. I think it might have to be kind of late on solstice, maybe.
Yeah, well, reindeer sausage is a great option for a local and festive.
And festive. That's for a nice little antiplatter, right?
Right.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
That's a great idea.
I guess we're kind of getting down toward the bottom of the hour here. Before we get to that, I guess, what are some other things that we've missed in terms of that kind of big star of the show? I know ham is a super, super popular one. This is one that we always had ham for Easter in my house. Mm-hmm. And is there a difference between, there's so many varieties of ham. I wouldn't even know where to start buying my own ham. There's spiral cut and there's ones that are basically already done for you, and there's smoked varieties. And how do you unpack all that?
Well, I think, be careful. I've accidentally purchased a ham that's pre-sliced and not known it. And then you put it in the oven and it dries completely out because the heat's getting into every one of those slices.
Oh, okay.
And so you can really kill a ham that way. But
because they're supposed to be a little dry, but not that dry.
Yeah. Right. Do you have any thoughts on ham?
We used to do hams when I was growing up, but it's when we...
We've moved away from
because, you know, we're spoiled with lamb and chicken and turkeys that we raise ourselves.
That are all very good. Do you all right, so let's do, I want to talk about, I guess we have some time, turkeys, brining, no brining. What do you think?
I haven't brined them. We did pigs several years ago.
Uh-huh.
Did a few pigs and decided to make our own ham and so found a recipe for brining. It was... way too salty.
Yeah.
And
that's a big experiment.
Yeah.
To do kind of trial and error with. Yeah. And same with, I mean, just at the same with a full size turkey, if you're going to try that, you want to have something dialed in. Is that something that you think is necessary, Maya?
Brining was really on trend for about a decade, and you know, Alton Brown and everybody were brining their turkeys and putting out brine recipes and stuff. And we have definitely swung back the other direction where it's kind of going more the non-brining trend. And I think part of it is practicality, finding a spot, a bucket big enough to brine a turkey, and the quantities of salt you're having to put in. And it's just kind of impractical. So where are you storing that turkey to keep it cold while it's in a bucket?
Yeah, the bathtub does not.
People don't really have walk-in refrigerators to be putting these things in. And so I think that the challenge really is the practicality. I mean, you have to get it thawed several days earlier, and there's all of this pre-planning, and it becomes kind of stressful.
Well, and yeah. Because the whole point of it is to, you know, ostensibly keep the bird juicy and moist throughout a long cooking process. What are some other ways then to do that might be a little more practical, that don't take 2 days in advance and all the extra ingredients?
So one thing that we've tried, and I don't know, you can correct me if this is not right. But,
as long as it's delicious, it's right.
That's right.
Yes.
Coating it with salt and just leaving it uncovered in the fridge. And I've had good luck with that.
Because
makes the skin crispier, it seems like.
That's almost like a very light, quick cure, almost on some level. And yeah, it really dries the skin out and gives you a nice crispy skin.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. And you do a nice salt rub, and that can make a world of difference. And definitely you can rub butter and herbs and stuff under the skin and do that
or
too.
Or put bacon under the skin.
Yeah.
Oh, now there's a trick.
Bacon on everything, right?
Yeah. It never hurts.
Yeah, but you could also tent your bird with foil, and that helps keep a lot of the juiciness in, and then take it off in the right at the end of cooking to get it that color that you're really
get
hoping
it nice
for.
And brown.
Yeah, yeah, that's one another way to do it. But yeah, I'm with Amy on the salt rub.
Yeah, and then in as far as long as we're talking about turkey, because that tends to be one of the more popular sort of stars of a holiday meal. Do you do any prep work in terms of carving that bird beforehand, or do you just put it in the oven hole? And I mean, are we trussing? Are we taking wishbones out? Are we doing any major prep work before?
I love a stuffed turkey. And I know that that's, you know, everyone says, oh, dangerous and all that stuff. But I love stuffing that comes from a turkey. So I love to stuff a turkey.
Does that not affect the cooking time with that big, dense ball of stuff right in the middle of that bird?
It does.
And so does that add to the challenge of keeping breasts juicy and moist while the rest of it? How do you manage all that? I've never tried it that way because it seems like a very challenging variable, that stuffing in the middle.
Right. Well, you want to take your thermometer, just like you stick it in the turkey to check the temp. You want to stick it into your stuffing and check the temp, make sure you have it cooked all the way through in the center as well.
And so what are the magical ingredients for stuffing? Because stuffing is, and I guess I would call it dressing since it's the way I make it is not in a bird.
Yep. Yep. We have dressing.
We have dressing. I never make it the same way twice. I always find some other little spin outside of, you know, dried bread cubes and some chicken stock and onions and celery. Outside of that, it's kind of a blank slate. Do you have a standby that you go with, either of you?
We like adding raisins or something like
that. Oh, something a little sweet. Yeah?
Yeah, I love like a nice sage sausage and maybe some chopped up apples with the celery and onion.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. But one time I spent Thanksgiving with a friend of mine, Kim Sune, up in Anchorage. She's a food writer for ADN with me, and she always has oyster stuffing because she is from New Orleans, actually.
I've never tried that.
It was my first time ever having it, but I was like, why don't Alaskans do oyster stuffing? We've got oysters for
days. Wow. What is that?
Because the oysters never make it to the stuffing.
That's right.
They're just appetizers. That's right. Well, so same principle, just breadcrumbs, but just using oysters as a protein.
Right. So putting some oysters in there, but definitely changes the flavor profile. Instead of having like sage and kind of those flavors, you're having this brininess and saltiness. And it was a completely different approach than I'd ever seen before, but I was fascinated by it.
Very interesting. The adding the sweetness was something that the way I found out to do that this year was I used a loaf of Hawaiian sweet bread. Made bread cubes out of that. And that was right on. I didn't have to add anything else, and it was the perfect amount of sweetness in the background over some sage spiced sausage. And that was really good. Sweetness in the dressing is pretty key, I think.
I think a couple other ways you could do that along with your chicken broth. You can add some apple cider. Or you can use cornbread, which usually has some sweetness to it.
Yes, and cornbread stuffing is, I think, wholly underrated.
Oh, totally.
And a lot, because you have to go to the pain of making a loaf or making a pan of cornbread beforehand, but kind of worth it in the end, right? Again, we're talking about once a year meals, so why not put a little extra work in and enjoy the extra calories as well?
Totally.
There's no calories on holidays.
That's right. between just we're into that season now. We're just kind of we'll take care of that in the new year.
I don't believe in calories. I'm a chef.
I just believe in tasty things. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a quick break. Joined this hour with Maya Wilson, head chef at Addy Camp and also cookbook author of Alaska from Scratch. Amy Seitz joining us this morning as well from Lancashire Farms, talking all about holiday cooking, favorite recipes, tips and tricks in the kitchen, ways to try and keep things local as much as we can here in Alaska. And of course, we would love to hear from you, your stories, thoughts, or recipe ideas, all those sorts of things as we get back for the second half of the show. And actually, let's just squeeze this in before we take a break. Good morning. You are on The Conversation. Who's this?
Good morning. This is Dave Brighton.
Hey, good morning, Dave. How are you?
Doing all right. I don't know if I missed the conversation on stuff and trying to find the right phone number, but I do dressing, but when you asked about a recipe, one year I had a family, and I was the only single person in the family, and so we were doing Thanksgiving because my parents were out of town, and they said, well, Dave, you just do the stuffing, and I said, you know, I could do something more elaborate, so I made a goal to make a really good stuffing, and the recipe had I roasted chestnuts and chopped those up, mm-hmm. and added a little bit of pork sausage with sage in amongst the bread cubes and, you know, the regular chicken stock and everything, and it was kind of the star of Thanksgiving, which I wanted to make a point to my family that I knew.
Well, very good, Dave, and thanks for that. Thanks for that, Colin. Thanks for that magical ingredient. I think I want to talk about that for a second. We might have to just kind of blow right through this break here because chestnuts. Almost a cliche sort of holiday item, but
I'm gonna start singing the song right now.
Almost, but I've never worked with them. I know you can get them in the store sometimes, have you ever worked with them? I've never worked with them.
No, I just sing about them.
Just sing their tales.
Just sing the song. But no, I've worked with hazelnuts around the holidays. I like to put it in my cranberry chutney or it's good in desserts, but not ever chestnuts.
I'm gonna have to. Okay, so my list is expanding of things that I need to try. So lamb, chestnuts. All right, we're gonna get all this sorted out over the break. And when we come back, of course, we would love to hear some more of your calls. 283-8414 is the number here this morning on the Kenai Conversation. Gonna grab a refill on the coffees and be back with you in a few moments. Stay with us. And thanks for staying with us back this morning here on the Kenai Conversation, joined with Amy Seitz from Lancashire Farms in Soldotna and Maya Wilson, local cookbook author and chef, and talking all about holiday cooking. We spent a lot of the first portion of the program talking about sort of the stars of the show and different recipes for things like turkey and lamb and ham and all the big fun things. I wanted to spend this second portion of the show talking about some of the other side dishes and other sort of background players when we were putting together these big meals. And during the break, Maya, you were talking about a major ingredient when you're talking about putting together one of these big meals that has, you know, 17 different dishes and several courses. Eggs are a part of all of that, and there's a huge we're very lucky here locally that we have a huge variety of fresh, locally produced eggs from not just chickens but ducks and beyond. And what you had some thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. I know that Amy has eggs over at her farm.
Right.
And so as fresh and as local as possible, especially if you're going to be making something like a good boozy eggnog, which is a favorite thing that I love to make at the holidays.
I've never made eggnog. I have no idea how that's done.
I should have brought you some today.
If only this were Friday afternoon.
Well, you could have held on to it for, you know.
And homemade eggnog is, I think,
absolutely
delicious.
All right,
absolutely
so maybe
incredible.
So maybe for the uninitiated, we could quickly do like a 101.
Yeah.
Of how do we do an eggnog?
Well, first I would say begin with the freshest eggs you can find, mm-hmm. because you are working with what is essentially a raw egg. But when you add a lot of liquor, and I like rum, bourbon, cognac, all really nice, and eggnog, a combination of the three is just perfect. And when you add a lot of liquor straight to eggs, it cures them. And it kind of...
Okay.
So there's no bacteria that can live when...
In that much booze.
not that much booze.
And so there's nothing to be afraid of. It actually completely changes the texture of the eggs. So there's no kind of raw egg mouthfeel going on there. And you can age it. It can... Eggnog actually started as a means to preserve eggs and cream and milk into the winter months. And so you can, once you put the liquor in there, it will last for weeks in the refrigerator.
So real quickly, so we're starting with a batch of eggs and some cream, and we're bringing this up to a certain temperature. Does it matter? Just a light boil, and then?
Well, that would be a cooked eggnog. And,
okay.
And there, you can make those, and warm eggnog's really nice. But this is not a cooked eggnog. This is, you put the liquor straight in the egg yolks.
And so, okay, a completely chemical kind of a thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
And
okay.
I don't know if that's how Amy makes hers, but she can speak to it.
I've only drank it.
Oh. Well, I should have brought you some too.
All right. Next year, it's an eggnog party.
We got it.
So speaking of eggnog, the spices in it, mm-hmm. nutmeg, cinnamon.
I usually just stick with straight nutmeg. I'm a nutmeg girl.
So that
I love nutmeg.
And I will advocate for this fresh nutmeg.
Yep.
There's a night and day difference. I mean, nothing against having a jar of nutmeg on the shelf for this or that or the other thing. But if you're really looking to make something pop, and especially something like eggnog where you can finish it off with a fresh couple of a little grind there right at the end, mm-hmm. it really wakes that up and makes it feel fresh.
Totally agree.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about pie crusts a little bit. And this is my specific question is I've heard of a lot of folks who like to put like a splash of vodka in the pie crust because this does something and it makes it smoother or doesn't allow as much gluten to form or something along those lines. I don't know if that is like an old wives' tale or if that has anything to do with anything, or maybe there's just a lot of drinking going on in that kitchen. But what's the trick to a really nice buttery flaky pie crust?
I've never tried vodka in my crust, but I have seen recipes that include vinegar, and I would guess that it does a very similar thing.
And yeah, which is to keep it tender and not so chewy without the gluten formation.
Yes, but also if you don't overwork it, that really makes a huge difference. A combination of butter and lard is a nice way to go to keep it really flaky.
Mm-hmm.
And all butter crust can be a little bit tricky, but some people have really perfected them. I'm sure we have some callers out there who have, recipes they would die by.
I would love to hear some of those pie crust recipes.
And since no calories in the holidays, lard is a good thing to use.
I've never cooked with lard. I've never used it for anything that I can think of off the top of my head. What makes it a different sort of medium for this, that, or the other thing?
Well, it's an animal product versus shortening. That's a processed product. And so lard is kind of the more natural fat to use. And it really kind of imparts that structure and that kind of richness that you really want to look for in a pie crust. And, oh, and by all means, use salt.
In everything.
Crust, yeah, in everything at all times. But crust in particular needs salt to kind of stand up to whatever sweetness you're going to put in it.
Yeah, and that's something I think for folks who don't spend a ton of time in the kitchen, is an important tip. We are told so often that too much salt is a bad thing. But the difference between, an okay gravy and a fantastic gravy is like a quarter teaspoon of salt.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think a good salt.
And yes, also good salt. And again, that's something that I think if you look real hard, you can find some of that locally. I know there are folks down in Homer who like to make their own sea salt and that kind of thing. So there is an end to how much local flair you can put into a holiday meal. But if you're creative enough, you can find all sorts of stuff. What are some other, we talked earlier about crab being a portion of a holiday meal. What are some other, besides lamb, of course, for you, Amy, some other kind of local things that you like to integrate, whether that's, maybe that's root vegetables and that sort of thing? Yeah.
We always love the beets.
Yeah.
We have them still left over.
And not sliced out of the can with the weird jiggly, none of that stuff?
No, roasted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love roasted beets.
Yeah.
Do you have lots of different varieties? Because when I moved up here and started going around to some different farmers markets, I was so surprised at how many different varieties of beets there are. There's so much more.
There are so many different varieties.
There's some that look like candy canes. They're just beautiful.
And golden.
Yeah.
And then there's the deep red, and then not quite as deep red, and more of the marbled red.
How would you classify a beet dish? Because beets are so, I wouldn't even say they're not necessarily sweet, but they do have a very high sugar content.
And they are kind of sweet.
They're kind of sweet, but they still have that a very earthy flavor to them in the background. How would you classify that dish? Is that more of a dessert thing? Is that more of a side thing?
I classify it as a vegetable. As a side,
and
I love to throw roasted beets on a salad, with some goat cheese and greens and a vinaigrette, kind of cut that sweetness. And that's a nice way.
Yeah, a few years ago we did a roasted beet salad where we roasted the beets and then cooled them and cut them up. And it's kind of like a roasted beet sweet potato salad.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. And sweet potatoes are another one of those sort of kind of a holiday standby, but they've lost kind of their character, I feel like, because at least for me, in my experience, I tend to think of them as again, coming out of the can and dumped into a baking dish with some marshmallows and some maple syrup. But they can be a lot more than that. They can be a lot more than just a very sugary, sweet dessert. What are some other recipe ideas maybe for some winter vegetables? Including sweet potatoes.
You can scallop sweet potatoes with some nice, like a nice white cheese. And you can go a very savory direction with those and some, you know, fresh thyme in there and some sage. Those are nice ways to treat sweet potatoes where they're not sweet. Mm-hmm. And just you let that natural sweetness come through, but don't add any sugar or any maple syrup or
all the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Which we still like our sweet potatoes or yams to be sweet, but we do like a sweet potato or a yam apricot dish. I mean, it's so no marshmallows on top, even though that was one of my favorites growing up. But yeah, just this really yummy yam apricot, a little brown sugar.
And I love a roasted sweet potato. We roast them and kind of get them good and brown and a little bit crispy on the edges and season them really well. You can even use a little heat with them because they can stand up to that spiciness.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty robust, pretty robust starch. I wanted to talk a little bit about side dishes. Anyone who has been forced to put up with me during the holidays knows that I'm going to bring a green bean casserole, and it's something that I will spend way too much time on for no reason, because that to me is a perfectly acceptable dish the standard way with a can of green beans and some Suprema mushroom soup. But I for whatever reason, I make it all from scratch. What are some of your favorite side dishes that maybe you only that are specifically kind of a holiday thing for you that sort of mark that time of year?
One thing that it's more of an appetizer.
Yeah.
That we eat well.
Yeah. And that works too. Yeah. Let's have that.
But roasted garlic. So, you know, just roasting the whole garlic bulb and brie.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Now we're
talking. Yes. Now we're everyone's jaws dropped. Did you bring any of that too?
And now that we're doing pretty good at growing our own garlic, we have not many left over this year, but.
So there'll be an extra special treat.
It'll be an extra special treat to have our own garlic. Mm-hmm.
For you, Maya, what are some side dishes or maybe some appetizers that really make it the holidays for you?
I always make a cranberry chutney, and it's, you know, awesome if we have some local cranberries to work with. And add some apples and pears and some crystallized ginger and break that all down. And it's absolutely beautiful on the plate, but it tastes so good, like with some turkey, some duck.
It's something a little bit lighter and something to cut through all the richness of the rest of the meal instead of drowning your turkey in gravy, as delicious as that is. This helps ensure that you might stay awake for some longer portion of the day afterwards.
Some tartness and brightness, and I think it's a really cool way to use, you know, the cranberries that you get, and you can can it and keep it.
And that's another way you were talking at the beginning of the hour of having some diversity in your flavors and textures. And that's another way to do that is to introduce something that's really the opposite end of the spectrum with sweet and a little bit sour in a chutney versus, again, the fattiness and the richness of some of the other dishes. What are some other ways you like to integrate some variety? Is it textures? Is it flavors?
Oh, I think one of the best ways to eat is by color. So if you have a lot of color on your plate or on your table, that means you're getting a good variety and you're getting a lot of healthy vitamins and minerals mixed in there too. If you have greens and you have your oranges and you have, you know, those purple beets, and that it really indicates that you're having a nice variety both for your diet and for your palate.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing we like to do to add color is carrots, because they're especially Alaska grown, super
again,
sweet.
Yes.
But we found a recipe, candied ginger carrots.
Candied ginger carrots.
Yeah.
So when this is something that you'll see a lot around holidays. I see a lot around the holidays is recipe for candied this, candied that. Typically, what does that mean? Is that just, I don't know exactly what that is to have something candied.
That's what the recipe called. And it really wasn't very, I mean, maybe it was caramelized ginger carrots, but it, a lot of ginger flavor and a lot of carrot flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Not much sugar added to it.
Not much. Well, you don't need a ton. Maybe just a little bit to kind of glaze over and bring everything together a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. maybe it's glazed. That's, but I know with like the candied pecans or whatever, they're sugar.
Those are coated in like a crust of, yeah.
Yeah, and candied yams, I'm pretty sure, have been just cooked down in a sweet syrup.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah. broken down. But the ones in the can, anyway.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk about, we talked a little bit about pie making and that area of desserts, but there's such a wide, I guess pies get all the attention during the holidays. And I don't know why that is, because as delicious as they are, there's so many other ways to kind of wrap up a meal. Are there other ways that you guys like to kind of bring things to a close for a meal besides, I really want to try your pumpkin custard thing. That sounds phenomenal.
That was really yummy.
Yeah.
It is really yummy.
But what other things have you tried in the past, or what other things mark sort of a dessert for you guys?
We always make several different kinds of Christmas cookies every year mm-hmm. around this time, and also candies. We make a peanut butter ball.
It's sure.
Like, you know, those balls of peanut butter you roll in chocolate, and it's like a homemade Reese's.
Yeah.
And we love those at the holidays. We uh-huh. make them every year, or, you know, frosted cutout sugar cookies and all those classics.
Yeah.
We traditionally went the normal pie, although we did have one. It's called Cherry Delight. Which is just, you know, a graham cracker crust with a cream cheese layer and then a whipped cream layer and cherries on top. And yeah, just.
There's nothing wrong with any of that. That all
no, that's why yeah. Cherry Delight.
And I wonder, you know, I would love to hear, I wish I would have thought about this a little bit earlier in the show, if anybody still does this. There is that tradition of candy making or cookie making.
Yeah.
That is a huge part of the holidays. I know it was when I was younger, that was something we would get together with neighbors a lot. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the store and buying a cartload of almond bark and graham crackers
right.
and chocolate and just spend an entire night putting all this together in like a dozen different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another way getting kids involved and that. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And gingerbread is another one that's really popular this time of year. And if you have it as a cake or if you have it as the cookie, whatever the flavor of that molasses and the ginger, that's really common.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't focus too much on the sweets. And actually this Thanksgiving we didn't even have dessert. So.
That's always, for me too, that's a tough one because there's so many other parts of that meal that I'm so excited mm-hmm. about that you go, oh my God, I've got 2 days worth of food here and I haven't even gotten to dessert yet.
Right.
So yeah, worthwhile maybe once and again to make that a bigger supporting player sometimes.
Right.
Well, we're just about out of time. We're running down just to the last few minutes. I guess I wanted to kind of close out and get, I guess maybe borderline a little bit sentimental and talk a little bit about what is it that makes a good holiday family meal for you guys. We've talked about all the sort of individual parts, but all together, what do we think about when we're at this time of year and talking about food and togetherness?
Yeah, just being together, really. I mean, that's as long as everyone's happy.
Well, as long as there's plenty of eggnog, I think.
Right. And you do need the eggnog because sometimes being around family more during the holidays can be taxing emotionally. And a little nip of eggnog can take you a long way.
But, although with everyone having different kitchens now.
Yes, that's right.
It does help. But no, I think, you know, turn the music on and have the Christmas tree lit and have food in the oven and everybody at the table and play some board games and do a puzzle and you throw some snowballs. And yeah.
That's, if we get any snow.
Yeah, right. Yeah. If we have snow, I think you just jinxed it.
Oh, I hope I... Oh, my, you're probably right. I didn't. It'll be all my fault.
Yeah.
We'll have Trivial Pursuit was one thing that, you know, was starting to be a tradition. My sisters and I just read the card. We wouldn't actually play the game. Just mm-hmm. as we're cooking, read the cards and answer the questions.
Oh,
and
there you go. That's, yeah, that's a good way to kind of wind through that long day in the kitchen. Do a little mm-hmm. trivial pursuit on the side. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, again, we just down to a couple minutes here. I did want to thank you, both of you again, for coming in this morning. I know you're both super busy this time of year. I wanted a quick shout out, Maya. If I know that there's some news maybe coming. Addie Camp is getting pretty close to opening. Yeah,
yeah, a couple weeks before the new year we'll be open, and it's looking like maybe even before Christmas.
Wow, that's very exciting. Very exciting.
And Freshly 365 is a great place to get greens for
that's
holidays.
Right. Fresh 365 right there on Whistle Hill, just outside, well, not outside of Soldotna, on the edge of Soldotna. And Amy, for folks who would like to get in touch with Lancashire Farms, how can they find you?
We are in the local food directory that the Kenai Local Foods puts out. My phone number is displayed on the Alaska Farm Bureau website.
All right. So I'm pretty easy to find. Pretty easy to get a hold of. And again, the local food directory, a great place to go, even this time of year, to find out what's available here locally to add to your holiday meals. Well, I wanted to, again, thank you both so much for taking some time and coming in today. A lot of fun to talk about this kind of stuff and bring a fun end to the year and talk about things that we can share a little bit together in that way. So once again, thank you both so much. Amy Seitz and Maya Wilson, it was a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you.